WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Barbara Bogave, in for Terry Gross. Jomling Tenzing Norgay says he climbs mountains because it's in his blood. Born in Darjeeling, India, Norgay belongs to the Sherpa ethnic group, a mountain people who have traditionally served as guides for foreign climbers in the Himalayas. His father, Tenzing Norgay Sherpa, was the first person, along with Sir Edmund Hillary, to reach the summit of Mount Everest in 1953. Norgay hiked and trekked in the region with his father as a child, and says that ever since he was 6 years old, he dreamed of one day also making it to the top of Everest. But his father, who died when Norgay was 21, discouraged him, maintaining that he climbed his whole life so that his children wouldn't have to. But Norgay persisted. Finally, his opportunity came in 1996, when he was invited to join the IMAX filming expedition on Everest. While the film team was on the mountain, a sudden storm blew in, resulting in the death of 8 climbers from another expedition. In his new book, Touching My Father's Soul, Norgay writes of his experience on Everest and the spiritual significance climbing the world's highest mountain holds for him and once held for his father.
You know, there's something about it that called him to the mountain all the time. And ever since he was a small boy, he had dreams of climbing this mountain and always, you know, he was always attracted to it. And in the lectures that I followed with him, and I heard from him. He talked a lot about, you know, the experience of climbing, but when I personally sat down to talk to him, he would not talk to me too much about the climbing techniques, but more about what the mountain was, what the mountain meant to him, and those were all in the religious sense, because you know, Mount Everest to be called Chomo Longma, and the deity that resides on Everest, Myo Lang Sangma, you know, she's the deity that my father worshipped. And he always, you know, told me, you know, that you should always respect the mountains because they are the abode of the snows where the gods live. And he, I think, had a different view, you know, like just like I do. And I learned from him and from other Sherpas about viewing mountains differently than just another rock.
Now, your father was celebrated around the world after he made it to the summit with Sir Edmund Hillary in 1953. He was awarded the George Medal from the Queen of England. You were born 13 years later. How did your father's fame affect your family life? How did you feel it as a kid?
Life for us was normal while we went to school in Darjeeling. Because my father lived there, you know, he was just a normal person there. Being his son, you know, being the son of a famous father, he was away a lot. We were in boarding school, you know, for 12 years we were in boarding school.
This is you and your brothers?
Yes, mm-hmm. Yes, me and my two brothers, Norbu and Dame, and my sister, Dicky. You know, all of us were in boarding school. So, you know, I personally didn't have much time to spend with him and, you know, to be with him.
So you missed him as a kid?
Yes. I think I missed him as a kid and as a young adult. And just when I was in my teens is when I came to the U.S. to go to school, and then he passed away before, you know, it was too late to learn anything. And I think my whole motivation to pursue climbing this mountain was to try to learn, you know, what I had missed, you know, while my father was alive.
At the time that you were invited to be part of the IMAX filming expedition, what was your climbing experience? What mountains had you climbed?
I was in the U.S. for almost 9 or 10 years, and before that, I had done some climbing in the Sikkim Himalayas. And these are all small mountains. We call them, you know, trekking peaks. And they can range up to 21 to 22,000 feet from 18,000. And in 92, I did a small expedition, a solo expedition, to do some 5 summits in Sikkim. And as far as high altitude, you know, I had not been up above 21,500 or so. And this was my first high altitude, you know, high, big mountain.
Were you afraid that maybe you didn't have the strength or the skill to make it to the top, given that all the other members of the expedition had significant experience in high altitudes?
No, you know, this is something that I felt ever since I was a boy, that I was going to climb Mount Everest sooner or later. And I was confident even when I was at the age of 18, when I asked my father I wanted to climb this mountain, I was very confident of, you know, getting to the top. And not because of my strength, but it's just I had faith in myself and in the mountain that, you know, I was going to climb this mountain one day. And as far as being fit for this mountain, you know, I was a Sherpa, you know, by ethnic group, my, you know, being a Sherpa and being the son of Tenzin Norgay also, I think, gave me a boost that, you know, I have it in my blood to climb this mountain and to do what my father had done before.
Do you mean that literally, physiologically?
Yes. I think we, the Sherpas, are believed, you know, to have, you know, bigger lungs. And, you know, we adapt to higher altitudes a lot faster and, you know, easily than any other humans in the planet here.
You were offered the position of climbing leader on the expedition. What were you responsible for?
Well, my responsibilities, you know, climbing Everest in 96 and when my father climbed Everest in 1953 were, we had very, it was very similar, you know, in regard to my father and my role. And my role was to help, you know, get all the loads up to the higher camps, make sure that all the camps are well stocked and the campsites are put up, the fixed ropes are up. You know, I organized groups of Sherpas who would fix the ropes on the mountain.
These are the ropes and that the climbers
use,
follow
yes.
and use
yes.
and
yes.
attach their gear to.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes. And I was more of a liaison between the Sherpas and the members. Because I, you know, I could speak English and I can speak Nepali and Sherpa. And because sometimes you can get into some misunderstanding between the members and the Sherpas.
After you hired porters to carry loads to base camp and you established a camp there, you described the whole scene at the base camp of Everest as a boom town without a mayor. And you said that you write that it reminded you of college. What is it like there at base camp in Everest?
It's a zoo. You know, you have, when we were climbing, there were about 15 expeditions. And each expedition has an average of 10 members and another about 20 Sherpas. So it's about 35, maybe up to 45 to 50, you know, people in one expedition. And that's a lot when you have, you know, 15, 16 expeditions. Every camp, you know, is unique because everybody has their own dining tent. They have a storage tent, you know, it's almost as big as your grocery stores over here. They have all the goodies in there, and they have communication tents now. And things that people bring in today is a little bit too much, you know, too much of high tech. And with so many people there, you know, there's not much, too much space in the base camp area. I mean, it's big, but there's only a few nice areas to camp because it's all on a glacier, and the ice is always melting below you.
My guest is Jamling Tenzing Norgay. His father, Tenzing Norgay Sherpa, was the first man, along with Sir Edmund Hillary, to reach the summit of Mount Everest in 1953. Jamling Norgay also made it to the top of Everest with the IMAX filming expedition in 1996. He has a new book about the trip called Touching My Father's Soul. We'll talk more in a moment. This is Fresh Air. Back with Jamling Tenzing Norgay. His father, Tenzing Norgay Sherpa, accompanied Sir Edmund Hillary on the first ascent of Everest in 1953. Just 5 years ago, Jamling Norgay also made it to the top of that mountain as a member of the IMAX filming expedition. Now, the first really dangerous part of the climb is called the Khumbu Icefall. What makes it so dangerous? And you point out that it's particularly dangerous for Sherpas carrying loads.
Yes, yes. You know, the Khumbu Icefall is a very, it's almost like a large river of ice boulders moving, you know, a couple of feet a day. And you never know when these boulders are going to collapse, or it's sort of a labyrinth of, you know, these ice blocks. And you don't know when one of the crevices is going to open or close, or, you know, you might be on a ladder crossing one of the crevices, and all of a sudden if it closes or opens, then you're in trouble. Or, you know, a boulder falls on you, and it's very unpredictable in this area, especially in the later part of the day, because as the sun comes out, you know, ice melts and it gets warmer and there's more movement. And Sherpas are more, you know, they risk their lives a lot more than anyone else because they ferry loads up to the higher camps, you know, a lot more. I mean, in one climb or one, you know, one climb on Everest, I think, or on average, a Sherpa goes through the ice fall maybe about 18, 20 times, maybe more. And whereas a Westerner would probably go up the ice fall maybe like 4 times or 5 times at the most. And so that way, you know, the Sherpas, they risk their lives, you know, a lot more.
How many times did you pass through it on the 1996 expedition?
I went through the ice fall maybe about 9 or 10 times. And I did not go through it as much as, you know, the other Sherpas did. And I went through it with the team members because we were doing the film. We were filming and I, you know, I had to be with them all the time. And it was not something that I look forward to going through because every time it, you know, the icefall would change. If we went through it, you know, today and 3 days later when we go through it again, you know, it looked a little different. And so, you know, the ladder's been moved. And we had a team of Sherpas that maintained the icefall for 2 months. The sole job was to go up and down the icefall every morning. That was like 3-4 in the morning, then go up to make sure that the route was still safe. If it wasn't, their job was to fix the icefall and then come back.
While your team was waiting to summit, at the same time, a sudden storm came up and endangered the lives of another expedition. 8 climbers lost their lives in that storm. The story is told in John Krakauer's book, Into Thin Air, and a number of other books about the trip. At what point did you know that the climbers making the ascent on May 10th, 1996, were in trouble?
You know, I think we sensed trouble that afternoon when we, looking through the telescope, you know, up on the ridge between the Hillary Step and the South Summit, we can see climbers, they were still up there at about 3 o'clock. You know, they were going for the summit. And immediately David looked at me, you know, David Brashears and Robert Schauer and Ed Wiesters, you know, we looked at each other and said, you know, the communication between our eyes was like, there's going to be trouble because it is very late, you know, to be up that high on the mountain at that time.
Where were you on the mountain?
We were lower down in Camp 2, which is at about 21,000 feet, 21,500 feet. And we can see straight up on, you know, on Mount Everest. And we noticed that, you know, when people were still climbing at that time, we wondered why, what was going on. And we even sort of partly felt that there might be trouble. Even the day before when we saw all these 30-some-odd people going up towards the last camp. And there were quite a few of them that were inexperienced, and they were very slow.
The team leader of that expedition, Rob Hall, was stranded and was in radio communication with other climbers and also with his wife. Did you hear any of those radio transmissions?
Oh, yes, I did. I was in the tent when they were talking, and it was a very, very sad moment. I mean, at one point I broke down, you know, and I just left the tent because, you know, I could not take any more. And it reminded me also a lot about, you know, why I was on the mountain and about, you know, hoping that I would not have to make the same call to my wife, you know, back home.
Was he pretending things were all right, or how did the conversation go?
I think when he talked to his wife, I think he knew that, you know, he was not going to make it. You know, he basically was giving up. And he knew that this was probably going to be the last time he was ever going to talk to his wife. And, you know, but he was very strong and very, you know, good about it. You know, he, you know, tried to keep a straight face and trying to convince his wife that he was going to come down and, you know, not to worry, that he was going to be fine and there was going to be help. And which at that point we knew, you know, that it was not going to happen. And that's what really hit us, was when they were talking about this.
I think a lot of people thought in the wake of this that too many inexperienced climbers can pay a high price and attempt a summit, and in the process endanger the lives of guides and also of Sherpas.
Others, yes, yes.
What's your perspective on that?
I feel that if a person wants to endanger their lives, you know, that is not right. I mean, at least if you want to climb Everest, you should come there with some experience or have climbed some other mountains. The commercial teams should screen the climbers before taking them on, you know, a big mountain and a dangerous mountain like Mount Everest.
What was the thinking among the other Sherpas on your team during the rescue effort? Did they feel they weren't going to take risks to go out and find stranded climbers without extra pay or incentive?
Well, a few of the Sherpas that were up there, you know, they volunteered freely to go up and help. And they are, again, employees, you know, of the Western groups there, so they have to follow the leader. If the leader says, well, you go and rescue, you know, because a lot of times we don't want to give away, you know, the Sherpa people, you know, the Sherpas that are on the mountain, because they're trying to save them and save their energy, you know, to do some other thing or to help, you know, bring some other people down, or maybe to go up and to go up higher on the mountain to bring those people down. And, you know, and a lot of times in moments like these, leaders come out and say, well, we'll give you an extra bonus when you go up and, you know, help, or when you do another trip to bring back this injured climber down the mountain, which happened in the beginning of the climb, where we had to bring, you know, where we had to collect about 35 Sherpas to bring this one injured climber down the mountain.
I've read that dead bodies litter Everest, that the bodies of climbers have been left there in many cases. Did you see any?
Yes, I did. Actually, I saw maybe about 5 or 6 bodies up there. And it's not a pretty sight, you know, to see. The first body that I ever saw on the mountain just scared me, because I've heard so much about them, but never seen them personally. And right, you know, we had to walk right past by one of them. It's almost not even a full body, but sort of a half body wrapped up in some tarpaulin. And it gives you a chill and sort of makes you wonder why you are here. And, you know, you can end up like one of them. And we climbed, you know, like I said, after when the accidents took place, when these people died, when we climbed afterwards, that's when we passed through a lot of the bodies that were, you know, of friends that had just died, you know, a couple of days ago. And it was a very sad sight, you know, to see friends lying there frozen and knowing that there was nothing we could do to help them.
I think Sherpas have a name for bodies down on the mountain.
Yeah, the ones below, we call them momos. You know, it's sort of a joke. We have, it's sort of a Tibetan Sherpa delicacy, so like meat dumplings. And I was surprised when the Sherpas told me, oh, this is a Momo, you know. I was like, well, it's not really that funny, but then later on, after I was on the mountain for a while, you tend to sort of get the joke, and so you keep some humor to, you know, keep you moving.
I think your father attempted Everest 7 times. Is it something
Yes.
you wanted to do again?
No, my father tried, you know, 6 times, and then on the 7th attempt, he finally made it, because he this is something he wanted to do all his life. And after the 7th time, when he finally made it, he did not have, you know, he did not even attempt to climb Everest. And I was very lucky to have made it on my first attempt, and I don't have any plans to go back again, because, you know, I have completed my goal. You know, I have fulfilled my dream of following my father's footsteps and being there with him, and I don't see any reason to go back again, because it's done. And you know, I'm happy with what I have, and, you know, what I've learned from, you know, this mountain.
Jamling Tenzing Norgay, I want to thank you very much for talking with me today.
Well, thank you very much, Barbara.
Jamling Tenzing Norgay's new book is Touching My Father's Soul. Norgay is one of 3 climbers featured in the IMAX film Everest. I'm Barbara Bogave, and this is Fresh Air.